This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time. Okay, Kate, this week's catch-up feels very timely. We are on day two coming out of stage one restrictions in Victoria.
Oh, thank God.
Oscar went back to kinder today and Tilly is at the neighbour's house, so I am alone.
Oh, my gosh. I can sense the, like,
oh my God,
champagne bubbles behind you.
Oh,
feels so good. Excited?
Yeah, really excited.
Like as excited as you, I mean.
Maybe not as excited as me, but pretty excited. A bit nervous, though. Like he saw one of the boys in his class at the front of parking in the same kind of spot and wouldn't talk to him because he was, you know, that goofy kind of.
Yeah, it's like first day back after summer.
Yeah, very cute.
I'm not there yet, Catherine. I've still got
Well,
two
I was thinking
weeks.
About you because what year is Gracie in? Is she?
Grace is in grade three. So I've got 2 weeks till Etta goes back or whatever, a week and a half.
Yeah.
And then another 2 weeks and then my eldest will go back. So, you know, a little bit longer, but still.
I
think what I realized, and I'm sure there's a lot of parents in this situation, is that uncertainty, it's the same feeling as when I thought that I wouldn't actually go into labor and my babies wouldn't come out. Like, I thought that maybe they would be at home with me forever.
Yeah.
I thought I couldn't actually see that date.
I feel like we were all feeling like that. Like last week I was feeling pretty depressed about the state of the world.
Yeah, last week was tough. Last week was tough. Although,
rock bottom,
I say, I did spend Saturday at the Yarra Valley Writers Festival online in my studio on my own.
And was this... This was you and your mum, wasn't it? This was your Mother's Day
and gift we were on WhatsApp together.
Cute.
It was so well done. So hats off to them. Give them a follow on Instagram. I think they're on Twitter as well. Because whether or not they do a blended festival next year or whatever they do, it was just really well done. They turned it around from the inaugural first time kind of in real life festival to an online thing, and they did
Amazing.
It really damn well. So,
and is any of that content going to be available online or like now?
Yes,
or?
I think some of it is, and you can look up and there's different ways you can engage, and they've still got different events happening, like book club events happening. So check out their website or on Instagram and you can look at all that. But really, really well done. And you know what it was too? That feeling of going to a festival or going to a conference and having – the whole day to immerse yourself in it. Like I'm loving the Zoom events and things like that, but also you can literally stop stirring the thing on the stove, step into the event and then step back, you know, and you don't get the full immersion of it.
Well, you don't get the lunch and the, you know, and the walking around and the, that stuff's nice. So,
that was fun.
Okay, let's start by talking writing. Now, I think the last time we checked in, you had been writing. Are you still?
I had been writing. Not really, I must admit. Although, having said that, I taught a class this week for Writers Victoria on creative resilience. And, you know, this happens to me all the time. At the same time as I was teaching it, I did the exercises that I had set for the people in the class. And you know what? They work. Obviously.
Oh, like, that's fantastic. But
it was great because it made me do the things like sit down, show up, get some words on the page, go at it from this way, you know, trying to kind of be that trickster, trick yourself back into the writing. So, yeah, it has worked. I've been doing some reading, you know, it's getting there. But those morning hours, Catherine, are mostly for work now, for all the other things in our lives.
Which is an excellent segue because I just remembered you have sent me something.
I have sent you.
Super exciting, which I'm going to download now. The title of it is Mother Fault Social Video.
Yes, because we're recording this on Thursday. I am in the middle of a cover reveal, Catherine. It's halfway between today and tomorrow. I have never done such a complicated Instagram tiles thing in my life.
So tell us, so you had instructions on
I did
what you need to do.
Yeah, and let me say, because I asked, I really did ask for them, so I recommend this to everyone out there who gets to do these things. Oftentimes I find, or when people talk to us about it, there's a gap between what your publisher wants to do and what you are capable of doing, or they think that maybe you are across it. And you just want to be on the same page about these things. And Simon and Schuster have been insanely amazing about being on the same page with me and giving me everything I need for this. And so this is the final cover, because there has been this cover going around, but it was the proof copy, so it wasn't the final cover. And this is now my precious, amazing full cover. And I love it.
All right, I'm going to start the video.
Start the video so you can see it.
Okay. Oh, my God, you're in the middle of it. Oh, my. All right. It is a 15-second video. Oh, my God, it's beautiful. A novel of rare insight. J.P. Pumori shook me to my core. I could not put it down. A clarion call wrapped in vivid prose. A shattering lightning bolt of a book. Oh, my God, these are all puffs.
I know.
It's beautiful.
Do you like it?
Oh, my God. It's so beautiful. I'm trying to understand it. It's gorgeous.
So it's the most amazing story behind it too, because do you remember us talking about when I was up in Darwin and I just, like, we'd done the deal and my best mate, Erica, and I went out for dinner kind of to celebrate. And I think my publisher had sent me an email saying, oh, you know, what are you thinking about covers, etc. And Erica, who's an artist and amazing on all things visual, where I am not, was scrolling through Instagram and showing me a bunch of stuff, like showing me all these amazing artists and things. And I sent through this image from this guy, Daniel Lint, who's Cut Tear on Instagram. And after all these different iterations within the publishing house that I kind of didn't know about, Sandy Cole, the incredible designer, has collaborated with this guy, this artist, Daniel Lint, to make that cover. And
it's beautiful. It's very colourful, different kind of mosaic-y
like
looking
collage
things.
Yeah. Material, rock. Road, they're all different textures, right, kind of that are linked with the book.
Oh, congrats.
So it's very special.
It's amazing.
And
you also named this book, which is a rare thing. You've named both of your books, haven't you?
I have. And yeah, I mean, gifts of names that really came along and worked. It wasn't the mother fault for ages. For ages and ages, it was something different. But when it came, it clicked.
Sometimes I think
things can do that. Anyway, so that's been the exciting thing. And for people who want to think or talk or are interested in cover design, the other thing that I've seen come up recently is that Jane Rawson and Annabelle Smith are back with What to Expect When You're Expecting a Book, which is fantastic. And their latest one is on cover design as well. So if people want to check that out.
Oh, fabulous.
They should.
That I would love to know how many people have read that series that they've written. It is such a popular and brilliant piece of work.
Write a book, you two. Write a book. What have you been writing, Catherine?
I wrote an article for Lee Kaufman's blog. It will come out soon, and it is all about not writing.
Timely.
Corona moves quick, though. I feel like I've moved on from that now.
Yeah.
I feel like I've turned a bit of a corner.
Right.
Adaptable helped. So I'm polishing up my draft to send it to a couple of producers. That sounds very exciting.
It sounds
like
amazing.
A sentence I never thought I would say. If I could say that to a person who was myself 10 years younger, we would high five each other.
Drop it into conversation just all the time, as much as you can.
This is probably fairly indulgent. Yes. So I'm polishing that up a bit and I'm trying to do it quickly. I don't know if I ever told you, this is just a cautionary tale for listeners. Probably 12 months before I signed the helpline, there was a competition. It was a pretty small competition. You had to send, I think it was like the first 5 chapters of the book in for emerging writers. One of the big 5 publishers in Australia picked the winner. And that was like, the competition was that small that was sort of the prize, just that you got the glory of winning. Anyway, my book won my 5 chapters won, and the publisher asked to see the whole thing. And I was like, sure, super, super excited, but just wanted to fix a few things up.
Oh my gosh. How long did you take?
Took me 6 months.
Catherine!
I never heard from them. I still.
Yeah, because you waited 6 months.
Yeah. So things not to do. So I am going to get it to these adaptable producers within the month.
Good. Good. Because perfect, you know, it just done. Done. Remember? Oh, done is better than perfect. In this instance, this is not.
Bad one. The most heartbreaking thing, though, is you hear nothing.
Yeah.
Like, that is always the most heartbreaking response. We shall move on.
That's why you have to get straight onto a new project.
That's right. Mm. Courses in lockdown. I know you've taught some. Have you attended any?
I did that amazing Q&A with Charlotte Wood, which I still really recommend. And there is another good thing out there that came out this week, which was Charlotte in conversation with someone, Edwina, whose name I've just forgotten, at Sydney Opera House. Did you see the YouTube of that?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It was incredible because they were in Sydney Opera House alone on the stage recording it. Like it just, they recorded it last week because of Corona. Obviously there's no one in there, but it just looked like the most extraordinary experience. But that is about creativity in times of crisis. So we'll put a link in. That's really worthwhile people having a look at as well. So I've been doing a lot of.
Did you go to Chrissy Kinnean's? I was thinking in my head you were going. I was keen to go. That was run through the Victorian Writers' Centre on sensual writing.
Yes. No, I did it because I was at the Yarra Valley Writers' Festival, but I did ask her about it, Catherine, when I interviewed her.
Oh, excellent. So
she has given the most wonderful answer, which will be in next week's episode, in our interview with her. So, I haven't done lots of long courses, but a lot of the reading and the watching of the stuff that people are putting out right now, which I'm finding useful and I'm trying to treat as my kind of professional learning at the moment. I'm taking lots of notes and doing that kind of stuff. What about you?
Can I first ask side questions? Have you finished the RMIT course? No.
I have not.
No, you're on a leave of absence.
I'm on a leave of absence. And someone contacted me to talk about RMIT this week in some copy that they're writing about the course, and I had to just remind them again that I'm not alumni.
I had to drop out.
They talked about the podcast. I was like, yep, no. Catherine and I met at RMIT, but neither of us as yet have
completed
finished
the course. I've actually dropped out.
Completely?
Well, I sort of had to. I was on like my fourth leave of absence, and they had been so kind in continuing to grant them, but
maybe they've emailed me and I just, because of my password, I maybe there's an email in there saying
you're fine. They've kicked you out.
Oh, goodness. no, but that's kind of the beauty. I mean, I would recommend everyone finish the course, but I also never want to leave. I just want to be part of RMIT PWE for the rest of my life. So don't kick me out.
Well, I suppose it matters less if you want to teach that course, you have to finish it. Yeah, but if you're happy not to.
That's so true.
Teach it, you're okay.
You've done two courses now in lockdown.
I have done two courses recently. One technically wasn't in lockdown. That was the picture book one through the Australian Writers' Centre. And now I'm doing a TV screenwriting one. And they're both fantastic. I cannot rave about them enough. They're really good. The TV writing one is actually live, so it's on Thursday nights for 2 hours.
Nice.
Works surprisingly well. Like you have little breakout rooms and, you know, four of you might do an activity together and then reconvene. Very good.
And you're producing quite a bit of work in that?
Not a heap. The first week we had to hand stuff in, and the final week I think we do a live pitch to the rest of the class, and then maybe Holly, the tutor, looks at 5 pages I have in my head of something.
You are going to be able to run a course on pitching by the end of this year, probably. I reckon.
I feel like I've done lots of pitching.
You have.
Okay, we'll move on. We're not doing reading again. Did your heart just break?
Stop it. Everyone knows they can go to my Instagram to see what I'm reading anyway.
No, they're going to be getting Instagram tiles for now.
Okay. Oh, no, that's true, they are.
I'll have to scroll down.
Okay, so tell us. What are we talking about?
What we're watching. I'll go first.
Go.
Because mine is stolen from you. You sent me the best YouTube channel, the International Space Station.
How good.
It's so good. Very kid-friendly and super interesting.
Say you or the kids?
The kids. Okay. So you have Sunny. Do you know Sunny's surname? Sunny the astronaut?
can't remember it right now.
Sunny is a woman. She's an astronaut. She lives in space on the International Space Station, and she has a YouTube channel where she basically takes you through all the different stuff about living in space, from where you sleep. You can watch her wash her hair, it's how they so go good. To the toilet, what happens
Sunny
if they
Williams,
throw up.
Her name is.
Sunny Williams. Fabulous.
Sunny Williams.
Really, really good. Kids were mesmerized. And but even then, I showed it to my mum, and my mum was mesmerized. Really good.
So good. And you know, because my daughter actually, Gracie started writing a story about it, and then I've just been talking to her about it because even though we're not allowed to talk about reading, I've been reading Julia Baird's book, Phosphorescence, which has in there a chapter about the overview effect as well, like what the overview effect of what it does to a person when they see Earth from space and how it changes the brain. And so it's all about astronauts and what changes for them once they've come back down to Earth. And it's extraordinary. So, yeah, I feel like that's that part of homeschool I've nailed.
You totally nailed that.
Kind of that was like random learning and brought
child-centered learning, wasn't it? How did you stumble across that? Was
you know what we started doing is they had to do something from about space, and Gracie wasn't really into it, and I got up the other astronaut who sings Ground Control.
The guy.
Yeah, I got him up singing that song because I thought she'd be interested in that, and then we just fell down the YouTube hole of space.
It's very good. Hard recommend on that. I think that's all I'll do. Oh, no. The Last Dance is one I want to watch. Chicago Bulls. Were you a basketballer? This is heyday 90s Chicago Bulls documentary on Netflix.
I was not a basketballer, but Adam was a basketballer, is a hardcore fan, and has been watching The Last Dance. Like, that's his kind of time out from the family. He goes up into one of the kids' rooms, headphones on. He is loving it.
Everyone's loving it. I reckon I've had numerous people say how good it is. Carney and I are going to watch it together. We have not watched. He doesn't really watch TV, so this is sort of not for any political reason, just not very interested. But the last thing that we watched together that I can remember was I got gold class tickets at work for doing something, and we went and saw Kath and Kim the movie, which was the worst choice on so many levels. Like, if it had just, like...
What? Of all the things you could have said, that is just not what I thought you were going to say.
Like, it was such a bad choice because it was gold class as well. It was with Carney. He said, you can pick. I was like, well, this sounds pretty good. It was just...
Mate, you cracked me up.
Bad. It was
really cracked me up.
Very sad.
What have I been watching? Do you know what I want to tell you that I have been watching? Have you watched Jeff Van Der Zandt on Instagram?
No.
Okay, he is amazing. He's JJ Zandt on Instagram. He's the guy who did the TikTok thing that went viral.
What is TikTok? I don't even know what TikTok is. Like,
people will ring in and explain. Not ring in. We're not on radio, but they will.
Actually, we've got a call right now. Just funny you should say.
I don't actually use TikTok, but the young people who I know talk about TikTok. But he is a TikTok star, right? But you can just look at it on Instagram. He did the one with the press conference where Scott Morrison, like, kept saying, Andrew, don't interrupt me, Andrew. Anyway, I'll send them all to you. He is so funny. So you've just got to watch it. The girls and I'm not really a person who just sits on my phone looking at things, but we have not stopped watching this guy and his videos. He does one a day in quarantine, and he has got, A, an excellent beard, but B, they are hilarious. So that is my recommendation to you. Jeff Van Der Zandt on Instagram. He will make you really happy.
I'm excited. Writing that down. Kay Kerr is a former journalist and community newspaper editor, now freelance writer from Brisbane. She has written for publications including Peppermint, Organic Gardener, Broadsheet, and Daily Life. She lives with her husband and daughter on the Sunshine Coast. Hey Kerr, let's start at the start. Did you always want to write?
I always loved reading and writing. So I was, books were really important. Books were the best present that I could get at Christmas time or for my birthday. And I loved getting into stories like Secret Garden and The Little Princess and those kind of books. And I wrote a lot of picture books when I was really young. And I think when I was about 8, I wrote my first novel. And it was this really awful story about a girl who won the lottery and moved to France.
That sounds positive enough, happy enough.
Yeah, kind of like a reverse Little Princess with no morals. It was just about how good it would be to have heaps of money. but I think once I got to high school, I disengaged a little bit with reading and writing, and I don't think it was really, I guess, shown to us as a potential career, writing. It was if you wanted to, or if you liked English, you would be a teacher or you'd be a journalist.
Well, it feels so implausible, doesn't it, to be a writer? Like, what kind of careers counsellor would ever suggest to someone who said they I had the same experience. I completely sympathise with that.
And I just didn't know what an author even looked like. Like a contemporary writer that existed, it was like J.K. Rowling was pretty much my only idea of a writer, and she was over in England and, you know, super, super famous. So I didn't have, you know, I hadn't met anyone that had written a book or anything like that.
So you ended up working in newspapers though, didn't you? Did you study journalism? Was that the route that you took to get there?
Yeah. So that was like one of those careers counsellor tests you do where you answer all the questions and it tells you what kind of a job you'd be suited for. And I ended up getting journalism, and I took that very literally, even though it was a really ill-suited career choice for me. The idea of standing up in front of a class and being a teacher terrified me. So for some reason, I thought journalism would be a less terrifying option. And I really liked parts of it. I really liked the research and I guess the community newspaper side where you're meeting people and you're hearing their stories. But yeah, walking down the street with a microphone and asking people questions, going up to them, people I don't know, was literally my nightmare. So I don't know how I ended up doing that for so long.
And do you remember the first time you saw your name in print?
Yeah, I think I was in grade 11 or 12. I did some work experience at a newspaper on the Gold Coast, and I got to go and do a review of a Korean barbecue restaurant.
Oh. And
yeah, and I got a free meal, which I thought was just the most amazing thing ever.
Is that allowed? Yeah. And so you worked in newspapers. You did reviews of Korean barbecue. How and when did you make the switch to fiction?
It wasn't until a friend of mine who I'd worked with, who had been a journalist, Katie Rowney, she published a book with Penguin called Front Page News. And I kind of had this real light bulb moment of like, oh my gosh, we can do that. We can just write a book. I sort of, I guess, was waiting for permission or didn't know that was a sideways step that we could make. So once she had done that, it really planted a seed of me thinking, well, I love reading and I love books and I've always loved writing. So, you know, somebody else can do that from this career. Why can't I give it a try, basically?
And is Please Don't Hug Me the first manuscript you ever wrote?
It's the first manuscript, but it's about, like, I wrote so many versions of it before it ever went off to anybody else's eyes to see it.
And what was the pathway to publication? Who was the first person who got to see it?
I wrote in secret for a really long time. Like, I was pretty stressed out because at that stage I was editing a community newspaper, so it was a high stress job and I was not sleeping that well. So instead of sleeping at night, I would get up and I'd just write down sort of this voice-led story that was all voice and emotion and not really much plot. So I did that for a couple of months without really telling anyone. And I think I told my husband at some stage, but I was very cagey about it. I was very secretive about it. And I guess somewhere along that process, in the midst of it, I was in Ireland visiting my family because I've got Irish relatives over there. And my cousin and I decided to have this spur of the moment trip to New York because it's quite a short flight over there. So we went to New York for 3 or 4 days. And it was an amazing trip. We did all the awesome things like going to Broadway and going shopping and eating and having a wonderful time. But at the same time, I had a really sensory reaction to the city where I just didn't sleep. It was such a noisy, bright smells, like everything about the city just was an intense reaction. So I was kind of strung out there for 3 or 4 days of not sleeping. And when I got home, I started Googling. I thought it was strange. And I started Googling like sensory overload and sensory response and that kind of thing. And I started reading about women on the spectrum, on the autism spectrum, and that really sort of struck a chord with me. And then I ended up getting my own autism diagnosis. So once I had that, that sort of informed the story a little bit. I think I realized that my character that I'd been writing, that's what she'd been struggling with. So once I had that piece of information, that's kind of when the story took off. And from there, that's when I started to sort of play around with the idea of actually showing it to other people. So I think that literally the second person that read it was my agent, Danielle Binks.
Oh, wow. And how did you meet Danielle, who is attached to Jacinta Demarzay's agency? How did you meet her?
Yeah, so there's a conference in Brisbane called the CYA Conference. It's Children and Young Adult Fiction Conference, and you can pay to have these 5-minute pitch sessions or 10-minute pitch sessions where they read the first 10 pages of your manuscript, and you go in and they can give you feedback on it and tell you how to improve it. And yeah, so I'd been following Danielle because she's really involved in the Love OzYA community on Twitter and that kind of thing. So I'd been following her, and I just last minute saw her talking about doing these sessions and just signed up for one, I think a couple of weeks before she came up for it. And she was the only one that I saw on the day. And I was so nervous because I wasn't sure whether I was getting feedback or whether I was going to pitch to her. And so the idea of doing the elevator pitch and trying to sell the story was terrifying. But once I sat down in the chair, she was so lovely. And she was basically saying, like, you're the person that I've been waiting all day to see, and I really want your full manuscript. And
oh my God.
Straight away from the start. So that relieved all my nerves about that.
And did you have a full manuscript? Was the full manuscript? Yeah. So you sent it off. Was it a long wait between her receiving that and you hearing back?
No, it was really quick, and I signed with them really quickly. So that was, that was good, because I'm not so good at the waiting part. I think in publishing, everything moves so slow, I found, since that point. Like, signing with Danielle and Jacinta was quick, but I've noticed...
I feel like it's really quick or really, really slow. There is absolutely no in between, is there?
Yeah, and with journalism, I think, you publish daily or you publish weekly, or, like, and it's done and it's off the table. Whereas this, I think I signed with text even in the end of 2017, and the book's coming out now in 2020. Wow. So it's,
That's really long. And so the book came out at the start of last week. It's pretty nerve-wracking publishing a book at the best of times. This is probably not the best of times. What's the last few days been like for you?
Yeah, so before, I did a digital launch with Avid Reader, the bookshop in Brisbane, which is where I was planning on having my actual launch. So it was lovely to be able to do a digital launch with them instead. And I think in some ways it was less nerve-wracking than it would have been to actually being showing up to an event and speaking in front of a live crowd of people. The digital aspect definitely made it more accessible for me, and I think that I was able to answer the questions a lot easier and more honestly, because I wasn't facing that sort of social and sensory anxiety or input that sort of affects how I can speak off cuff. But yeah, the week's been, it's been intense week. Like, it's been ups and downs.
Has it? Have you had a lot of stuff to do? Like, is a lot of the events that you had planned to do, have they moved online?
There's been some interviews and that kind of thing, but I think it's just juggling having a small child at home, and she would normally be in kindy, and we would normally have grandparents around to help support us with the care of that. So when we're all of a sudden in this little bubble of having to, I guess, all be in this one small house at the same time and not having a lot of support, has made it a bit of a challenge, where my husband and I are taking turns in the office because he works from home anyway, so we're both kind of taking shifts of getting an hour or two of work done and then swapping over with childcare.
Speaking of coronavirus, you have a really wonderful blog on your website that listeners should check out. One of the more recent posts talks about how you were in Varuna, the writer's house, when the pandemic really escalated. Can you talk a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, that was such a strange time. So I went to Varuna, I think the 9th of March was when I left, and I was already sort of unsure about whether this was going to be a good idea, because all the news around corona was ramping up and there weren't that many cases in Australia at the time, but the news cycle was moving so quickly, I just wasn't sure what was going to happen within the span of a week. But I went down because I just thought, you know, worst case, I can always come home, and I'm going to be fairly isolated in a big house with.
It's such a special thing too. It would feel so hard to pull the plug on in that uncertain time, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'd gotten a grant to get to cover my travel expenses, and we'd done all the work for organising childcare, and I just thought I would roll the dice and go down. So I got there on the Monday. And it was strange because you ride all day and you're not really tuned in with the news. And then you get to the end of the day and you stop and you read the news or you open your phone and you see all the intense headlines. And I think by the Friday was when it was declared a pandemic. So that was definitely a very strange vibe. And because also Sydney Writers Festival lineup had been announced that week and then the next day cancelled or postponed, I think it was at the time. So just watching it all unfold and with the other people in the house and the things they were dealing with, there were people that had family overseas or people that worked in universities, so they were dealing with, you know, potentially putting all of their courses online, that kind of thing. And those of us that were interstate and having to face travelling home, it felt almost like, you know, a post-apocalyptic kind of a story to be in this isolated house in the mountains while all of this really heavy stuff is going on in the real world.
Having dinner together every night and all of those sorts of things? Was there still that side of Varuna going on?
There was at the start. And then I think once it got towards the end of the week, Sheila, who does all the amazing cooking down there, stopped coming in just to look after her. So she would drop food off and the vibe definitely changed from the first half of the week to the second half of the week. And I think either the next week they closed Varuna, I think. So I just sort of get it in before they closed the door. Yeah. I got so much writing done though, which is so strange. I think I had this fire lit under me of there's this pandemic coming and I don't know when I'm going to get to write again because I'm going home to lockdown with my family and a small kid. And I really, really wanted to, to get the words on the paper. So in that way, it was productive. But yeah, it's a very strange week.
And so this is the second novel that that you're working on. And is it? Do we have the same protagonist in? Is it Erin again, or is it a completely standalone?
Yeah, it's a standalone YA. I guess similar themes. I wanted to explore romance and dating on the spectrum and what that looks like, but I guess I started off wanting to write this really light story, and then the more I got into it, the more I kind of realised there's some not so light themes in there in terms of loneliness and, you know, what it means to be dating on the spectrum. So,
I'm keen to talk about the Own Voices movement. Can you tell us a little bit about what Own Voices is and what it means to you?
So it started as a hashtag on Twitter, Own Voices. It was a YA author in the US, Corinne Divis. I think I probably pronounced her name horribly there, but it was basically her way of highlighting diverse books where the author is from the diverse background that they're writing. So that could be race or gender, sexuality, disability. For me, it was if I pick up an Own Voices autistic novel, and there aren't that many of them, but it says to me that I can be more assured that what the story I'm going to read and the representation is not going to be harmful. It's going to be something that's treated in a way that's not stereotypical. It's just going to be probably, to me, a better story in terms of autistic characters.
And do you think that your future works will all feature characters that are on the spectrum or not necessarily? Is that something that's important to you?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are so many books out there that are made up of entirely neurotypical characters, so I can't see a time when I would write a book that didn't include at least one neurodiverse character, because there are so many different ways to be neurodiverse and how that can look in people. Mm. And I think that the representations that we have at the moment are really limited in scope. Mm. So if I'm going to get a platform to keep writing, which I hope that I am, I'm going to keep writing those characters.
Oh, good. I'm glad. And what was your writing practice before Corona, and what does it look like now?
So before Corona, I had my toddler has just started kindy this year. So I had some Monday, Tuesday. Yeah, amazing. 3 days a week where I sort of had these 4-hour windows of time. That had to include all of the housework, and I do a little bit of freelance copywriting and that kind of thing. But I definitely, at least on one of those days, would do a 2 or 3 hour block. And then also my toddler goes to my parents' house on a Friday, so I get a good chunk of writing done on a Friday. And sometimes, you know, on the weekend, I could squeeze in a half day if my partner and my daughter went to the beach or something like that. But it definitely isn't a write every day practice. Mm. And I'm not someone that can, at the end of the day, sit down and write. My brain's absolutely mush by that time of the night. So I need to set it aside in my calendar, in my diary, to be writing time for it to happen.
And what does it look like now? Corona is hard anyway, but book coming out, your head must be in that space too.
I've the first couple of weeks of being on lockdown and getting back from Varuna, my head wasn't in a space where I could sit and write. I felt the urge a little bit more in the last couple of weeks to maybe sit back down and do some more editing. Time constraints. I'm hoping that once we can look at schools being reopened somewhere down the track of this year, maybe that's wishful thinking, but
it is starting to feel plausible. I feel like it is.
I spoke to Anna Waitley. She does like a YouTube chat called Oz Chat. I don't know if you've seen.
It's fabulous. It is really fabulous.
And we were talking, I did one with her when I was at Varuna, and at that stage we were like, are our launches still going to be on? I don't know. And that still felt like a possibility then, and just how quickly everything's changing. It's really hard to look ahead and have any kind of certainty about what's going to happen. And I think that's a real challenge for me, because planning and things going to plan is such a big part of how I cope. So the lack of, you know, if I knew this is going to go for X amount of months, then, and even if that was 12 months or a really long time, I think that would be a lot easier to cope with than just the big question mark.
Yeah, I think we're all struggling with that a bit. Let's move on to advice for debut writers. Do you have any?
I would say to keep writing, to keep rewriting if you've got a story that you want to tell, or you think there's a gap on the bookcase where your book should be, to keep writing. My first draft of Please Don't Hug Me, and it would be generous to call it a first draft, was this sort of raw 30,000 word vomit of emotions and feeling, and no plot and no sort of understanding of the framework around narrative arc. And by just rewriting and rewriting and reading within that genre of YA and getting an idea for what level a book had to be at to be published, I just pushed through it. So I'd say just keep writing.
So what was your approach to plot? You had sort of almost, it sounds a bit like a stream of consciousness voice. How did you go about imposing plot once you had that?
Well, I would write to different teen experiences, and so that sort of set up the plot, because at the end of high school there's this very definitive 3 months, and in Queensland it kind of goes QCS, exam, then you have formal, then you have exams, graduation, schoolies. It's this 3-month intense block, so I use those marks of events to sort of follow my character along, and plot was kind of woven in afterwards, I guess, and sort of fixed up the pacing, in the edits.
Last question, Kay Kerr, what is your favourite novel by a debut author?
I have such a hard time with this question. I've been listening to this podcast since I signed with, I think it started right when I signed with Text.
I was just thinking when you were saying 2017.
Or maybe you started.
We must have just started. We were on a similar path by the sounds of it.
Yeah. And ever since I've been listening, because I think I've listened to most episodes, I always think about this question and how hard it is. But I guess I would go with some that I've read recently, because that feels like less pressure. So I would say Anna Waitley's Peter Liars Reading Normal, which is another own voices, neurodiverse, Oz YA book that's just out. We have the same publishing date, which is amazing.
I was about to say, hers has just come out as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, so I love that. And another one that I read recently and really loved was Ghost Bird by Lisa Fuller, which is another Oz YA.
Great recommendations. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us.
You can find the show notes for this episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. If you're feeling so inclined, we would love for you to leave us a review wherever you listen. This helps other people find us.
Get in touch with us via the contact page on our website or connect with the entire First Time gang on Twitter or Instagram at The First Time Pod. And don't forget, you can support us via Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thefirsttimepodcast. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We recorded this episode at Kathleen Syme Library on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons.